Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on major pro wrestling and MMA promotions, the occasional history lesson, and interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Ringside Wrap on Wednesday, January 4th, 2012. Oh, man. You see how out of sorts I am and how out of routine and habit I am to be in the lead chair for this show? Let me try that one more time. Welcome to Ringside Wrap, Wednesday, January 4th, 2012. And I wanted to say that just because I've already screwed up on writing checks and putting 2011 on there. I wanted to make sure I got 2012 in there so I would remember to say it. And in thinking that, I forgot completely about that opening bumper music that we play. Mike Sempervivi here with Rich Tate. Les, unfortunately, is not going to be with us this evening, but Rich is. And Rich, you like that? You like how I screwed up right? This is a hell of a start to 2012.
Oh, hey, you know, beautiful start, side of things to come. And, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll get Les to be a guest here next week.
Only if he goes back into his closet and he breaks out that late shining jacket, because he's got one just like Chris Jericho does. And I know the next time he does the show, he's going to be sitting there on the phone in that lit-up jacket, probably with the same look on his face.
I got to tell you, I'm watching Raw, and you know, you know it's coming, and then there it is, and the lights are out. You know who it's going to be, and it was crazy. Just the whole thing, the not speaking thing. Here's what I saw. I saw three different people, none of them Chris Jericho. I saw Hulk Hogan run out and play with the crowd. Then I saw it turn into Paul Stanley at a Kiss concert, splitting the audience and having them cheer from one side to the other. And then all of a sudden he turned into Boy George after he, raided Liberace's wardrobe. It was just weird. Just weird.
Well,
not the kind of return I was expecting.
Did you see the WWE.com exclusive interview with Chris Jericho after that?
Yeah, where he snubbed the camera guy?
Yes, but he continued to have that same grin on his face and then stopped and lit up the jacket and walked away, which I thought was fantastic. Good use of WWE.com exclusives there. That one actually made me laugh. But see, you're harder on this than I am. In a way, I liked it because it did, you know, it's in a way I did see Jericho because it's Jericho who looks at least that he's going to have control over at least the creative control over what he's doing, which he should. He's, you know, if nothing else, I mean, Shawn Michaels and he alone proved that. And then there's many other, you know, reasons why. But I did see Jericho. I saw that smarmy prick. And I thought it was different, and I thought it was good. And I thought I have faith in it because it's Jericho. And I just, for right now, I'm actually okay with it. It was weird. It was different, but it's going to be interesting to see where they go with it. Heard Dave Meltzer talk to Brian Alvarez this week, and he seemed to indicate because of the Alabama LSU rematch in the Sugar Bowl. What is the national championship? It's just the Bowl Championship Series, big Crystal football game. That's going to happen next Monday. So I guess there's talk of Jericho coming out and maybe doing the same thing. Now, in theory, he left it open where, you know, he was doing all the happy fan-friendly stuff and he was smiling and he left. I mean, they didn't, obviously, they wanted the crowd to turn on and boo him, which finally they did at the end, finally. It seemed to go on forever, but it also seems that they probably didn't get that turn reaction that they wanted, so Jericho kept hamming it up, and then finally when he walked away, they began to boo, and I thought it was intriguing. Now, doing it next week, which is, again, the rumor possibility that he does it again, just because why? They're going to get slaughtered in the ratings because of the football game, so why not have him draw it out another week? I don't know how long that can last for, but it's, again, I'm not as down on it as you, just because, you know, he's been very good being, you know, very smarmy and being a basically a prick. And he's very good at being able to pull it off. So I like where they could be going with it. I just have no idea where they could be going with it.
Yeah, I'm not down on him coming back, absolutely. I mean, you love the guy and love his work. It was just too weird. It wasn't anything like I was expecting it to be. I guess maybe that's part of the problem is, you know, you start expecting too much.
That got me in trouble with the Ring of Honor show. One of the things that got me in trouble with it. And yeah, it's, you know, you have the Kane scene of stuff, which is ridiculous. Because you have Jericho, if he's going to be, I don't know. It's you got Cena sitting somewhere in the middle, and Kane wants him to go dirty and to be evil because people are evil. And, you know, it basically gets made fun of by The Rock and gets made fun of by other people for pretending that he doesn't hear the boos. And then you have Jericho coming out and being an over-the-top version maybe of what Cena's doing. And I don't know. Who knows where they could be going with it? It's just if Jericho, and apparently he's going to be on the road full-time, I mean, as a wrestling fan, you know, we're all winners there because it's guaranteeing – that he's probably going to he's going to be working Royal Rumble, and then obviously he's going to be working WrestleMania, which that's great. So at least we're guaranteed another good match on WrestleMania. And I would love to see Jericho and Daniel Bryan. I doubt that'll happen, but it would be the perfect match, I think, for Daniel Bryan to be showcased on WrestleMania if by that point in April he's still, you know, in the mix to any, you know, discernible degree.
Yeah, if that's where they really, you know, feel like, you know, he's really fitting the role that they're looking for him to fill. I mean, right now with Del Rio out, Orton out, and who else is missing right now? Somebody else is out. Who am I missing?
Well, Mysterio's still out.
Yeah.
You got
some gaps, and they got to fill them, and it looks like, you know, they are maybe planning on Daniel Bryan to have a run here, because I'll be honest with you, when they put it on him, I was excited about it, but I really didn't see him even having it this long. I figured they'd probably do, you know, the same old thing and pull it back off of him a week or two later. But
they got plenty of time to still. Yeah, Royal Rumble, then obviously the Elimination Chamber coming after that, where, you know, titles and number one contenderships and spots at WrestleMania always are up into play, and it gives them wiggle room and the ability to change things around. I don't know. I'd love to see them do more with Daniel Bryan, but again, unless he's in a match, like, as long as he's in a good match at WrestleMania, I guess I can't complain too much. You know, it doesn't matter where he's on the card, as long as they have him matched up with someone, not like a Mason Ryan or an Ezekiel Jackson type, where, you know, you can give him a little bit more time and you showcase him a little bit more. And then, again, he and Jericho would be great. Now, if they decide to turn Daniel Bryan heel, which I guess is, you know, it's still a possibility there, because he could be the, you know, the way he's cheering and being over the top and standing on the announcing desk and stuff like that. I mean, you could have him go in a different direction too. But I guess that's all to be seen. Now, I guess one person that he could be wrestling at WrestleMania, although I would seriously doubt it, would be Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, what a weekend for Lesnar and Dana White and UFC at this point, huh? Do you see him doing WrestleMania though?
Yeah, you know.
This early?
You know, I wouldn't. If you know, you don't need him with The Rock. You really don't, and you're not going to need him with. I mean, that's one of the old things with Austin. It's like, you know, Austin, why would he come back for this one when, you know, you could save something up for the next time around where he's the focal point of the show, the way The Rock is this year? And I think Lesnar could do them more favors after WrestleMania. I mean, I'm not taking it back to when he debuted. But that was after WrestleMania. I'm trying to think when he went out and destroyed the Hardys, and Paul Lee was his agent and gave the in to get Paul Heyman back. After the whole WCW, ECW invasion thing went to bed. Something like that, I think, could work out and have better legs, because everyone's probably expecting Brock to be back for WrestleMania. I'll say this. You could do Brock Undertaker. But I think for business, if he's going to be back for any discernible period of time, even semi-regularly working, I would do it after WrestleMania. If you're only going to get him once, then yeah, I would definitely do WrestleMania. And I would definitely have him and The Undertaker, and obviously the Undertaker winning. But, Dana White said it, as Dave Meltzer asked him, he called it the other place, referring to WWE, but in the post-fight press conference on Friday night, last Friday night, he said, what does it mean? And Dana just said it means he's retired. If he's done, hey, he's done. He's done with the contract. He would be done with the UFC. Now, that's not, as far as the legalese on that deal, Dana would have to release him. It's not, exactly that simple, but it's, does he hold him up from working for WWE? Does he let him go to Japan and work for Inoki and IGF, where he was before? And, it looks like Inoki's group over there has got some traction with Josh Barnett, who Inoki is going to be losing. If Barnett wins the Strikeforce Grand Prix, which he will, and he's on good enough terms with the UFC, which he probably is, and at least will be, because, Lesnar being out, Cain Velasquez is out. You've got a pit of heavyweights in the UFC, so I can see Josh Barnett being more friendly with the UFC and vice versa, and that means he will not be able to work. They'll restructure his contract. He won't be able to work pro wrestling in Japan. Just won't happen that way. So, does Lesnar go over and fill the void for Inoki, where you have Peter Arts and Kaz Fujita and other guys who have been in Pride and K1 in the UFC doing pro wrestling matches? Does he prevent him from doing that? There's a lot of interesting questions that are going to need to be answered. Now, obviously, for Lesnar's point of view, WWE would be the best way to go, because the amount of money he'd make doing a WrestleMania and doing a spot appearance here and there would make the most sense, and obviously get him the most visibility and the most mileage out of that deal. So it's interesting. It's interesting because, again, who else? And again, at least it's a name to put in the mix that's fun to bandy about. Because who else is The Undertaker supposed to go up against this year? If not Brock Lesnar, who is it, Triple H?
Well,
that would be the second most logical step, I think.
Yeah, it seems to be the one most bandied about. You've got a good idea, though. I mean, if you do bring Brock in, if you're looking to keep Undertaker's streak going beyond this year, you kind of do want some guy in there, I think, at this point, that maybe not only is he going to draw you some money, not that The Rock's not going to, or not that the name alone, WrestleMania is not going to draw money, but, the thought of a Brock Lesnar coming in, just doing a one-shot deal, maybe putting him up against Undertaker, let Taker win one more time, maybe bring him back next year, maybe a couple of pay-per-views previous, and let him build up to something. And then do another shot next year. Who knows?
Rich. No, I was going to say, you just Wade Barrett. I mean, Wade Barrett's also – Undertaker never got his pound of flesh against Wade Barrett, and nobody remembers that. When Wade Barrett hit him with the Wasteland, and it looked like last WrestleMania, the lead-up to it was going to be, okay, we'll get Barrett, Undertaker, and we'll get Sheamus, Triple H.
Right.
Obviously, yeah. It didn't work out that way. But Barrett obviously is going to be in the mix. And again, we're just bandying about fantasy booking here, a little bit. But, you could do, if Lesnar would be willing to work six times after WrestleMania leading into next WrestleMania, that's when they should do Lesnar Undertaker. Because they can do more with less, in that time, and build up to it and not have to have them on too much, and people will still be excited about it. So you could do Barrett this year. I mean, and that's, again, if you could get Lesnar to commit to, a handful of non-wrestling appearances, and then maybe four to six, I don't know how it would work, actual in-ring wrestling matches, you know, on pay-per-views and Royal Rumble and Survivor Series and stuff like that leading up, I would absolutely do that and then do Barrett this year. But, you know, otherwise, you know, again, if you only get him for one, do Undertaker Lesnar. And, again, it gives you Undertaker Barrett for the next year for Undertaker to go and beat another big guy who, you know, again, and if you treat Barrett, you know, you could actually put some doubt in people's minds. It's going to be hard as it goes along to think anybody's going to beat The Undertaker. Actually, it's hard now to think anybody's going to beat The Undertaker. But if you come up with enough of a story, yeah, you're going to sit there and watch the show or watch the movie. You know, it does. Even if you know how it's, you know, if the good guy's going to win in the end, you want to see how they get there. So as long as they put some thought into it, I mean, to do, because again, Undertaker's only got to wrestle one match. So if you have Barrett properly, you know, placed throughout the year, which is, you know, a hell of a lot to ask for, you know, you could do Undertaker and Barrett next year for Undertaker's only match. And again, if, as long as he can wrestle one match a year, you know, that's, you keep the streak going. Or, you know, at least try to get as much as you can out of it.
Yeah, I like that. You know, and I got to say, when you're talking about Wade Barrett, I really like what they're doing with him. I absolutely hated the fact that they put him over Santino on Monday night. I just really felt like that was kind of out of place, because just because of the way they sell, you know, Santino to us, I really kind of thought, you know, let's keep pushing Barrett up and up and up and give him the credible wins. I don't know. It kind of took some wind out of it, but I do like the direction they're going with Barrett. I like him in that role.
And it's too bad they won't do it, but you could get a big super group over real well. And again, I don't know how much you could do with Regal, but Regal is a mouth. He's doing the FCW announcing now. John Moxley, who is, you know, we had him on this show. I think we had him right before his last Evolve match.
Yep.
Literally right before he signed with WWE. Maybe even signed for all we know. Don't know. But, you know, he was, and we had him on this show, and I'm brainlocking on his name in FCW right now. But, you know, those three as a group, and maybe, I mean, there's some other guys you have to, you know, that would be a great way, because, I mean, they're all got the gift of gab. They all can come across as cocky pricks. I don't know. And again, Barrett, you know, they're talking about Barrett's barrage, which I guess is just him thumping people. I mean, that could be a crew of guys. And again, it just gives more credibility. To me, it can be like any group that's properly done, can give more credibility to everybody involved.
Yeah, and I think Dean Ambrose was the name I think you were looking for.
Dean Ambrose, yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, Moxley would be perfect in that role. I wanted to ask you too. What did you think about the whole finish with Ziggler and CM Punk?
it was stupid. It no logic. But again, I guess it doesn't matter.
One thing I've always wondered about wrestling.
To them, it doesn't matter.
School. And this goes old school too. Is I never understood you know, and maybe it is different today because the situation is maybe different. But even in the old days, you know, when they were selling it as a sport, you know, I never quite understood. I always loved the foreign object thing, the hiding it. You know, you could maybe get a hint that some guy was putting, you know, some brass knuckles on his fist. The ref's missing it. You know, it's not on camera, but you kind of see him struggling with something over here, fiddling with something, and then he lays the guy out, and you know he did something, or maybe you're sitting ringside and you see it, but, you know, it's not on camera, and you're selling it as a sport. Well, you know, sports are all about replays and this, that, and the other, and you know, to me it was always, at least as a kid maybe looking at it, was, well, you know, they can go back and look at that, and they'll overturn that decision. You know, that's the dumb, you know, six-year-old Mark in me. I still think kind of the same way. Whereas, you know, if you're doing that, you know, all CM Punk's got to do at that point is say, you know, go look at the video. You know, you know, you'll see that this happened or that happened. You'll see him tapping out. You know, to me, I just think that's just a lame finish all the way around.
More when it's
on camera, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but, you know, I remember they would do that. But of course, you know, they would always bust the good guy when I think it was Ronnie Garvin. Roddy Garvin, Tully Blanchard, 86 for the national title. They went through the Great American Bash, and it was Blanchard was still bumping heads with Wahoo McDaniel and with Ronnie Garvin. And I think it was a tape test match on TV, Midland World. I can't remember if it was Worldwide or whatever Mid-Atlantic was at that time, NWA Pro it turned into, where it was, you know, JJ was, I think, slipping Tully a roll of quarters or something. No, that doesn't. They had a double knockout. Dusty Rhodes jumps in the ring and tapes Ronnie Garvin's hand. I think that's what it was. And Garvin knocks him out. Looks like he won the title. They go to the replay. And I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. And you're right. But I guess in the way they don't present it as sport that way, and that didn't bother me as much as in that era, the announcer would at least say, you know what Dolph Ziggler wants? Because he's sitting there celebrating, saying, count faster, count him out. There should have been an announcer, and Lawler knows this, but he didn't give a shit at that, you know, obviously. And why would he when you're getting yelled at through your earphones and all that sort of nonsense? But
sure.
Why not have the announcer? All the announcer's got to say is, you know what? Dolph Ziggler now has guaranteed himself, no matter what happens after tonight, he has guaranteed himself a number one title, you know, number one contendership title match. Again, he gets a rematch with Punk, and Punk's more banged up. You know, he's more banged up now. So this is actually smart for Ziggler to do because, you know, I don't know. You could at least try to cover up the stupidity of Ziggler saying, count faster so I don't win the title.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that's what bothered me more than anything, because the replay, I mean, there's some logic things that you obviously just have to throw out of your brain. I mean, because, again, I think a lot of promotions have tried doing the instant replay thing every once in a while, and I don't think it ever gets a truly good reaction. But at least if the storytellers were adding more logic into why the stuff was going on that was going on, at least covered up for a lot of the nonsense that's being scripted to happen in the ring in front of them, you know, it would make it at least a little more tolerable and at least try to. It was always the Jim Cornette thing, you know, in Ohio Valley, and he was a pro at it, and I'm sure Les was too. I didn't see that much Heartland, especially when, you know, if he ever got anybody torn from him in the way Cornette did, especially when there was that run with the Bashams. Because I think it was the Bashams going head up against each other, and I think it happened with Eminem and maybe the Heartbreakers as well. The Spirit Squad, it definitely happened where they took guys and just completely screwed everything up because they gave them gimmicks that were completely anti what they were doing in Ohio Valley, where he was trying to sell tickets and make actual dollars. They'd have guys, you know, like the Bashams. They teamed them up after being bitter rivals and building up this feud over years down there in Ohio Valley. He had to work on the fly, and he had to at least try to spit out to the people that were watching at home some sort of logic as to why these things were happening and why the presentation that he was giving them week after week was completely now a goofier, a bastardized, you know, wackier version of it. So it's, you know, it can be done. It's been done for years in wrestling, and at least it would at least bring in a little bit more logic to stuff like that happening. Because, you know, again, these are non-wrestling people, you know, writing wrestling, or in theory writing what's supposed to be professional wrestling, and they don't know it. They don't care about it. You have a bunch of guys who aren't proficient enough to do things on the fly. Or again, do I fault Dolph Ziggler for that? Yeah, he should probably know better at this point. But again, if somebody, the referee, saying, hey, you hype this up, you know, because somebody's in here telling Dolph Ziggler to do that, you can't really blame him. So again, I don't know, who knows, but stuff like that, it comes off dumb. And it's where, you know, the average fan watching at home, who's just a casual wrestling fan, but knows, you know, after years and years of watching even casually, that titles don't change on DQs and countouts, you know, or no contests. So, you know, again, it insults their intelligence. It insults everybody's intelligence. It's a logic gap that doesn't make any sense. And when you start losing people, the casual fan, with stuff like that, that's not good.
Yeah, I guess what is it our buddy say? You know, for what it is, it's good.
for it was okay for what it was.
Yeah. But, you know, in comparison to the crap I grew up with, or the great stuff I grew up with, this is crap. Check your common sense at the door, folks.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff when, you know, and you were a couple years older than I am, but that we thought was the drizzling crap to then that you look back on now, and it's like, you know what, maybe that wasn't so bad.
Yeah, well, here's the funny thing. You know, what's absolutely painful is when I watch old clips of stuff, and I'm sitting there going, oh, man. There was bad wrestling back then. nothing hurts worse than defending what I grew up with and seeing a match that, you know, other people have seen. And you look at the number of views underneath it, and you're like, well, you know, 200,000 people have seen this really bad match. I hope I don't try and go to defend these two guys, at, you know, to these 200,000 people.
No,
thanks.
Where you have trouble as an old school fan. The promo, because there's one thing that's been a little bit more immortalized than it should be, and it was the old school promo, because growing up, I saw a lot of bad promos and a lot of long rambling, we're not going to tape this again, so it's going out no matter what, bad promos.
I'm trying to remember who it was. I can't remember. Oh, man. I got to put it. There's a clip. I'm going to put it up. All right, we'll put it up tomorrow at ringsiderap.com. It's like the funniest promo ever. Look for it tomorrow. I'll make a note here and I'll find it, and we'll put that up.
It's jumping Jeff Farmer.
I believe that would be it. Yes.
Oh,
yep.
Man, it's him or George Gulis. So you always got a winner.
Yep.
God, this is for those people. God, this is great. But,
you know the promo I'm talking about.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I love it, but. Yeah, but and back for a second to Brock Lesnar. we're talking about him back in the wrestling and this fantasy world with the possibilities of seeing Brock Lesnar back in the wrestling. There's a reason for that. Brock Lesnar got beat up bad on Friday night. And Rich, I don't think you had a chance to see it, did you?
I'm sorry?
You didn't have a chance to see Lesnar over him, did you?
No, I did not. I ended up not getting to, and I guess after what did happen, I'm probably glad I didn't.
That's yeah, but
I was not prepared for it.
Well, and you know, I know we're coming up on break here in a bit too, but again, we're talking about Brock Lesnar and pro wrestling because Brock Lesnar got demolished by the Demolition Man, Alistair Overeem, on Friday night, UFC 141. Was it diverticulitis? Was it just the comfort and that he's reached in his life? Was it Overeem is just that bad of a man? It's probably a little bit of all three. But, yeah, Brock Lesnar immediately announced his retirement after that fight.
Were you surprised by that, by the way?
You know what? After watching the performance, no.
If I may, he's 5-3, right?
I think he's
5-3. Yeah, and see, the thing is, you forget the record, and you just go off what you've seen, and it's like, man, this guy's invincible, and then all of a sudden you do look at the record again, and it's like, okay.
Well, yeah, it's a different era now, but, you know, Brock, there was something about seeing Brock after all those years of watching New Year's Eve shows from Japan, when it was really big, and seeing the free show matchups, and seeing the you know, and just seeing some of the stuff that had taken place over there, it was really weird. And it was kind of funny to see Lesnar Overeem. To me, it was kind of like a bridge from that era. You know, Overeem was on plenty of those shows at his peak in K1 and in Pride. And it was, I don't, Brock just looked done. And, he, you know, he lost to Frank Mir, you know, after overwhelming him, but got caught. Came back from getting his face bounced around at the first bout of diverticulitis from Shane Carwin before going out and losing the title of Junior Dos Santos. And again, this second bout of diverticulitis, you know, he changed after the first one. Everybody said this was a new Brock Lesnar. He was calmer. He was more at peace. He was more reflective. He's had kids with Sable. He was at a different place. He was at a place of comfort. And again, diverticulitis is no joke. It takes a lot out of you. And you see what it did to that monster of a man with Lesnar. And I think those things, along with the fact that Alistair Overeem does hit really hard. He's been in K1 and in that type of competition for years and years and years. So, this was not the best judge on where Alistair Overeem is at right now. Again, his stamina is still going to be an issue. But again, if you knock guys out quickly in the first round, stamina can be a little bit overrated. You know, stamina wasn't an issue when Mike Tyson was killing people quickly. Now, obviously it can be, and it is going to be a concern for him. You know, but he's in there with the Junior Dos Santos and Shane and Cain Velasquez and guys like that and wrestlers and you know, guys of that ilk. But Lesnar, you know, he caught Lesnar at a good time. And this was, again, after seeing it and after seeing it smashed up like that, nah, I'm not surprised because, you know, what other fights are really out there for Lesnar, too, as far as, you know, he's going to be a ton of pay-per-view buys no matter what. But when you start looking at it from a sporting aspect, just purely a sports matchup aspect, who do you want to see Brock Lesnar up against? There's not many guys. I mean, you know, do you do Dos Santos? He's already lost to him. Velasquez, he's already lost to him. Do you do another rematch with Overeem? No, after this, I don't think anybody declaring to see it. You know, there's not a whole lot of guys, you know, up and coming. There are certainly freak show matchups. You know, he and Urshel Walker would make a lot of money. But again, it just he's at this funny stage where, you know, this is good. And again, I don't think he needs the money, but hey. Taking a payday from WWE, though, probably not a bad idea. But that's enough rambling right now. Get to a little bit more of the rest of the card about UFC 141 after the break we got coming up here.
Hi, everybody. This is Geddy Lee for RAD. To many of us, drunk driving is something that other people do. Certainly not one of our friends or relatives would do such a thing. When you see someone who's had too much to drink, about to get into a car, urge them to give up the keys and find alternate transportation. Always choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, you should too.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hey, parents. Finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi, son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak...
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
...to 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean... A fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Fairy residents, Tooth speaking. Sorry, there's no credit fairy here. What's that? He magically raises your credit score? Yeah, there's no credit fairy. But you can improve your credit by paying bills on time and keeping your credit card balances low. Money under your pillow? Sorry, kids only.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. Brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap. Mike Sempervivi and Rich Tate along with you. And along with us right now, from Ring of Honor, Mr. Caprice Coleman. Caprice, how are you doing tonight, man?
Doing good, brother. How you doing?
No complaints whatsoever. Now, you made your return to Ring of Honor, and I think the last time you were on here, and Rich, you'd have to refresh my memory here, because it may have been the show with you and Les. Caprice, you hadn't been on in quite some time, but the last time you were on, you had, I believe, just gotten back from Iraq?
Kuwait, yes, correct.
Oh, Kuwait, okay. Now, your career has taken a lot of twists and turns, I think, in that time. You recently just came back to Ring of Honor. Can you fill us in on what you've been doing now in the last little while?
Well, yeah, I've been back in country for, I think, about 2 years now. And I guess my quest when I came back to country was to get signed with one of the major league organizations and all, and I was blessed to get signed with Ring of Honor. And they signed me in October, and they've been using me ever since, and they actually signed me to be me. They didn't make me a character or anything else like the other organizations were trying to do. They hired me as me, and so I'm very thankful for that. I was able to do a lot of things with them and travel a lot of other places as well, but that's been one of the bigger things that I've been able to do.
Now, you were – I'm not sure if you were there in its earlier form. Did you ever work in Philadelphia or in some of the previous incarnations of Ring of Honor, or is this your first time with them?
No, actually, before I went overseas, I've worked with Ring of Honor, I think, like 2003, 2004, and I did, like, some stuff, New Jersey, Ohio, Virginia. I did probably about 4 or 5 shows with them. Pretty regular for a little while. I mean, maybe 4 or 5, 8 shows, I'm not sure, but, like, they were nothing. They were, like, a couple of do-or-dies. I did maybe 4 or 5 shows, something like that, or whatever. But it didn't last long. It was around the stage where I was doing a lot of things, but I wasn't too hip to the game at the time. So I was at a good point with them, but I was expecting, I guess, more and didn't realize that, you know, I should have just been happy with what I had, to be honest with you. So
did you have any expectations, or what were your, as far as when you first went in to reach out to Ring of Honor, did you reach out to Cornette and Delirious and everybody, or you know, did they reach out to you when they came down and worked in the Carolinas? And, you know, what have you learned in that time that made you more ready to be, you know, in Ring of Honor and what's a really interesting, a very interesting time for them, being signed with Sinclair and having arguably the most visibility they've ever had on TV. What were your thoughts leading into it, and how'd everything go?
Well, you know, I'm going to say this. I'm blessed because there are thousands of wrestlers out there that would love to be in the position that I'm in, and it's not because I'm the greatest in the world and all that. I'm blessed to be where I'm at now, and I know there's a lot of people in the indie circuit that's been trying. I've been trying for years to get there. When Ring of Honor first ran to me, they met me through Georgia Wrestling. It was through Bill Behrens of Wild Side Wrestling. They contacted Bill Behrens, and Bill Behrens, of course, told me that Ring of Honor was interested in me. And make a long story short, they were bringing me into, like, different places, and I was making, you know, kind of indie pay, which wasn't bad for Ring of Honor, because Ring of Honor was probably one of the higher indie pays, but it was like I was getting the same thing, but I was traveling like New York, New Jersey, and all these places, and not being wise about it, I was spending a whole lot more money to get through those places than what I was making. So what I had told Bill Behrens was to ask if, you know, if they could fly me to those places, I wouldn't charge anything to wrestle, was basically it, but I was nowhere near, you know, anybody on the card valuable enough to be flown. So it was a stupid move for me, and they was kind of like, yeah, okay, you know, it just kind of gave me the okey-doke, and I was dumb. I mean, I shouldn't have done that. If I had to do it all over again, I wouldn't have done that. But I did it, and it's done and over with. And when I came back in country, the same thing happened again. I started working down there in some Georgia wrestling territory that was anarchy, and I got the same phone call again. They contacted Behrens. They wanted to see if I still was able to do what I was able to do, and they had some North Carolina, Virginia bookers that was around the area. And so they brought me in, and instead of bringing me in, just kind of know your role, shut your mouth, they actually would give me opportunities to do things. And what they were doing was setting me up for different tests, man, to see how I would respond in different situations and against different type characters. And according to them, I passed the test, and I thank God for that. And they kept using me regularly with that. And then they made an offer to me. They said that they said the lyrics came to me. He said, "Look, we don't know what's getting ready to happen with the company. The company's getting ready to be bought out by Sinclair. We're thinking it's going to be a very good thing, but we're not sure what's going to happen with the roster. They said, we like you. We want to use you. Do you want to wrestle?" I was like, "Of course. I want to wrestle or whatever." So they said they would let me know what happened. So after the thing with Sinclair went down, they contacted me back and told me, you know, what they could do and all that. So with all the companies, with WWE, TNA, and Ring of Honor, Ring of Honor, I can honestly say, is the only company that never, like, took me along for a ride and just, you know, just dropped me off somewhere. They was always honest with me. They said, hey, they're interested in me. They just don't know what's going on right now. Once they find out, they said they will let me know. And that's what they did, and they've given me an opportunity. So that's where I'm at now.
Now, did the team with you and Sed, was that something that they had planned, or was that something that just kind of came together organically, or how did that work out? Because, you know, there were a lot of ups and downs as far as opinions on Final Battle. There were some things that, you know, people loved about the show, some things people didn't like about it. But what's one of the universal things about it is how well you guys have gelled and how good you've looked in the short period of time that you've been, you know, together in Ring of Honor. Talk about that, and just, you know, again, was it planned to be that way, or did it just sort of happen that way and things have clicked?
Well, you know what, I'm going to give people the privilege who've actually listened into this to get a privilege to some real talk. Here's the deal. You know, in the wrestling organization, you try your best to get a job, whichever way is possible, you know, as long as it's within your integrity. And when they told me that they had an idea for me, they said that they wanted me to tag with
Cedric Alexander.
And I knew Cedric Alexander. We actually met a couple of years ago at an NWA Legends convention, like a training thing, but it was like a seminar we had to go to. It was like a couple of weeks seminar with Tully Blanchard. And I met him, and I saw him at a couple of shows, and all. And we kind of hit it off at those shows. We kind of picked at each other because, you know, we were both the athletic black guy or whatever. And we said, well, we need to stay away from each other. They're gonna make us a team. You know, we always picked about that. And then, you know, and so we always picked. You know, we always sing the song. You know, we're brothers. We're happy, and we're singing, and we're colored. You know, and just playing around, just playing around. So when we see each other at shows, you know, we were always talk. We were always pretty cordial with each other. And he was a lot younger. And at the time when I met him, he really didn't know what he wanted to do as far as character wise, how he wanted to present himself and all that. So I was like coaching him along with that and all. And I noticed about him that, you know, this guy's young. He's extremely talented and he's hungry. And he's very teachable, you know, and he's humble, you know, and he's willing to do whatever, and he's talented where he is. So I told him, I said, man, as long as you stay clean, and as long as you stay humble and stay teachable, there's no reason why in five names your name shouldn't be a household name. I said, the things that he's able to do now, and then he's not at a point where, okay, well, nobody can tell me anything. He's always hungry to learn more. And then when we find something that he, you know, needs to work on, he doesn't take it as an insult. He goes home and works on it, you know what I'm saying? And for him to look up to me in that aspect, we look at it. I've been around a lot longer than he is, but push come to shove, we're actually in the same place now. So he could say, well, you know, I got here 12 years before you got here, so what does that say? You know what I'm saying? But he listens to me, and I mean, not that I'm the boss or anything, because a lot of things I listen to him on, because he has a lot of the newer aspects of wrestling ideas, and so our chemistry, man, is like a big brother, little brother type deal, man. He has great ideas, and I'm always coming up with stuff, and we're able to put things together, man. And when it comes out, it's something magical, man. And so that's me and Cedric, man. And I think as long as I can tag with him, man, I mean, there's nothing but up we can go. And I'm learning so much being with him. That's adding to what I'm able to do now, and I believe he could say the same as well. So I don't know, man. You can ask any question about Final Battle or whatever the question, negative and stuff too, man. I'm kind of curious to hear some of the negative stuff.
Well, you know, I think a lot of it, there was a pall over it for a lot of people. Obviously, with the move to Sinclair, you know, David Logano leaves, he was the one kind of you know, helping out with the production. And there was a, you know, if you're watching it at home on a computer, for a lot of people, it's tough. It's not real tough for me because I've been doing it for so long, so it doesn't really bother me too much. But, you know, with the instant replays and stuff like that, I think there was an issue that kind of hung over it that didn't help matters. But then, of course, there's a lot of, you know, where do you come down? Because here's an interesting thing, because you were wrestling with the Young Bucks, and I think it was one of the Young Bucks this week that came out and said, you know, I've gotten more concussions from flat back bumps than I ever have from getting hit in the head with chairs. And, you know, I mean, that's one of the things. And I'm being an ex-boxer and wrestling. And, you know, I played football. I am sensitive to concussions, but, you know, sometimes you're going to get concussions. But I think we know with this era with chairs, to me it was an ill-timed, kind of a really foolish thing to say, because there were a lot of old guys who came out and said, I've been taking flat back bumps my whole life, and you probably are taking them wrong if you keep knocking yourself out. You had a little bit of time in the game, and, you know, talk to Bob Evans about this too. There's a lot of guys there that have been wrestling for a long time. People don't realize that because they hadn't seen Wildside, or they hadn't seen these different promotions, and they're seeing you guys for the first time nationally. And you got guys like the Young Bucks who have not been around that long. But, you know, where do you come down on, like, a comment like that for him to make? Do you say anything to him? Do you pull him aside? Or is there truth in what he says? Because the chair shots were one thing that really bothered a lot of people. Even though there was context for him with Steven Generico, it was taken, I think, I guess, a little too far for too many.
Well, you asked me a question, man. I'm going to give you a straight-up answer. Here's the deal. I see a lot of what the Young Bucks are saying, and I say this for this reason. I don't know if you've ever been to, like, a Legends convention or where a lot of Legends are at or whatever at the same time. And last time I went, and I'm getting to a point here, it literally broke my heart, because I was seeing over 20 of my biggest heroes of the past walking around in wheelchairs, with canes, with walkers, oxygen tanks, in bad health, beat up, limping, knees, you know, amputated legs. It looked like a war zone, like a veteran's, like a war zone, because these guys for years were taking regular back bumps, taking these bumps for years and years, you know, five or six nights a week in front of the crowd, and they say, oh, it's fake, oh, it's entertainment, oh, it's this. It doesn't hurt that bad. You can get up the next day and do it. But these guys are crippled for the rest of their life, and are literally forgot about after their time is up, forgot about. No real insurance, because a lot of them didn't spend their money right or whatever. No real insurance policy. So they're trying to live, you know, in the past that they have, and their bodies are, like, destroyed because of them taking them back. And if you think about wrestling, like, the 70s or 80s, all they did was regular back bumps. You know what I'm saying? So I do see a lot in what the Young Bucks are saying. Do the Young Bucks take crazy bumps sometimes that, you know, knock you out and all that, if you take a regular bump? That point I do see, too, because a lot of people do take bumps that, you know, are over the edge. But the reason why they do that is because the fans are so smart these days. It's kind of like, well, that was real. Okay, that wasn't real. Okay, this was real. Oh, that was good. Oh, that wasn't bad. And who have never taken a bump before, that don't even realize the pain or the how much it, the impact it has on your body, if not at that time later, for a regular bump. The chair shots, I do agree that night that it was a lot of them, and all over the edge. Now, over the edge, I would say a little bit, and let me explain my point there. I would say over the edge because of how much they expose the fans to, because I do believe if I get hit with a chair, I'm gone. I'm dead. I'm next chapter. You know what I'm saying? But with them, the amount of times they got hit with a chair, which I know they are professionals, they know how to do these things, and it does hurt. It might not hurt as much at that time, but it hurts a lot later. And the next morning, I'm sure their heads were the throbbing, unprotected chair shot. But what hurt me the most was this right here. I'm sitting in the back, and we're getting ready for our match, and I'm watching these matches that are going on, and Kevin Steen and Steve Corino are doing, you know, all these outlandish chair shots and doing all these moves that were, like, okay, way out there, okay? And to me, I was like, okay, it was crazy, never seen before. I wasn't booing it because I was like, wow, you know, fans would never be able to see anything like this. What made me mad, what disappointed me, was this right here. out of all the stuff they were doing and all the feedback that we were getting after the show about too many chair shots, too many this and that, nobody ever commented on the fact that even though they was doing all this stuff, you know what the crowd chant went into? We want fire. We want fire. Okay, nobody commented on that, which means this right here. No matter what we end up in this era of wrestling doing, it's still not enough. Because they're like, oh, this is that. And you have all these people that have never taken a back bump before, never taken a flip, never worked a crowd, has no charisma, sit on their face on the internet with a camera in front of them and sit there, this was terrible, this was sloppy, there's no need for this, this was that, and have no idea what these people are going through on the regular matches. So you have somebody that goes out there and goes outlandish and goes way out there to please the people, and the people crap on them and say, yo, you took too many chair shots, but sure it would have been nice if you had some fire. Really? Really? I mean, that's where I'm at. I hate to sound like a heel, but it hurt my feelings because I'm like, here these guys are literally tearing themselves up, I mean, badly, injuring themselves badly, you know, for the fans, to give the fans this, and instead of them appreciate, they say, oh, it's too much, oh, it's this, we want fire. You know, where did wrestling go to where it's like, we're never going to be able to please anybody anymore? I remember being at, and I hope I'm not talking too long, but I remember being at a show, actually a Ring of Honor show, to where I do, like, I'm pretty athletic, but my main thing is, like, being able to get real high on stuff, like getting real high, jumping real high. So it was somewhere during the ring, I did a real high crossbody to the outside of the ring, like I got real high in the air or whatever, and I jumped down. And I read one of the feedbacks or whatever. It's like, if Priest Coleman did an extremely high crossbody, it would have been better if he did like a corkscrew or a twist or a spin or something in it to end it off. You know what I'm saying? It's, I was like, okay, do a crossbody, punk. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
I mean,
you know what I'm saying? But it's these people that watch us like we're video games that don't realize that, you know, we're putting our bodies on the line doing this stuff, and they're never satisfied. Be a fan. I mean, everybody can talk and have their opinions and all this stuff and your freedom of speech. But, I mean, people forget, even though this is sold as entertainment, which I really disagree, because tell me it's entertainment when I got to go to the doctor and explain to him how this happened to me on my insurance. You know what I'm saying? And people aren't satisfied anymore. So,
well,
I mean, I hope I didn't go too far off the land, but
no,
I'm a straight-up person, man. I'm a straight-up person.
Well, a lot of times when we talk about Ring of Honor with people, we especially the ones who've seen different eras there, we ask them about the crowd now, because one thing leading into the show, like Kevin Kelly was on the show talking about it, was the Carolina crowds, what they had was more family. It was a different type
right.
of crowd. It was a crowd that saw the TV for the first time. And you've seen with Ring of Honor, just by following, they have had some weird ups and downs with their people. You know, obviously, you know, with when they lost Danielson and they lost McGinnis and they went to 18, there was a lot. Where are you at right now with this crowd? Because that crowd in New York was not exactly the type of crowd they want, I think, for Ring of Honor TV as far as a Sinclair thing. Because where are you at? Because again, with your values and with what you're about, as well as what wrestling is, what it used to be, and trying to find a healthy balance, where are you at right now with ROH's fan base? Because they seem to have a lot of new, fresher people, but again, they also have a lot of people that just love to criticize, and more than that, are like a New York crowd, which is unique. It's a unique thing.
Here's the deal with that, and I hope this will explain a lot of things. I do truly understand about the old Ring of Honor fan base, and now, like the Carolina shows and all, were more family oriented, and all, because it's like a new crowd. And all that, more of the pure wrestling. I believe that's what Ring of Honor is known for. It's wrestling ability, it's athleticism, pure wrestling prowess is what Ring of Honor is founded on. The thing about the match in New York, which was, I think it was more of that match, and I think the Briscoes and the World's Greatest Tag Team match, the Kevin Steen thing, I believe why they went out that far is because that angle had been going on for over a year now, and it was kind of like a culmination of a build-up for over that year, and I think they just tried to make a big bang out of that. Of course, it's not like the normal that always happens. And the thing with Sinclair broadcasts a lot of flack on, okay, this isn't Ring of Honor and this and that and all. They have to realize that, you know, now that we're on national TV, even though they're letting us be Ring of Honor, we still have time restrictions, you know, and certain things that we can do, and we have venues that, you know, we are not at a point now we can say, okay, we're going to do a show every other day at such and such, such and such. So we're actually kind of at a state where we have to make the best of what we have, you know, until we can get a bigger fan base or get more money in to say, okay, now we're going to do a show every other day, like Ring of Honor, I mean, not like WWE or TNA does, you know, 3 or 4 shows a week. You know, so what we're broadcasting is like, you know, the best of what we have now. I believe as time goes on, it'll get better, you know, get more matches during an hour and stuff like that. But, you know, we're kind of doing the best of what we have now. There's a lot of new stars there that I think Ring of Honor has to get the story of, especially like me and Cedric, and people just getting the story, people getting used to it. And I think that's the main thing. It's not that, you know, anybody's a better or worse or anything like that. It's just fans getting used to who these people are. And I believe once they get used to the new people, then the love will come back the same way it was with all. It's just a newness that everybody's trying. And the gap, that, with, even though we're at broadcast, getting a new exposure, we still have to adjust to the newness of the TV time zones and stuff like that. So I hope that answers your question.
Hey, Caprice, Rich here. I wanted to ask you, before I ask you a question, I wanted to just say this about Ring of Honor and talking about, you know, going to that next level. I think as long as Ring of Honor keeps doing what it's doing, it's going to find a bigger and better audience overall, the ones that won't be asking about fire. and at least we can hope so, right? You know, I wanted to ask you about Rejuvenating Fitness Services. Is that you as a personal trainer? What is that?
Oh, wow. I didn't know you. Okay, you actually looked up some stuff on me. Rejuvenating Fitness Services is my own company. It's a small company that I run. And basically, it's personal training mostly for elderly people. It's preventive maintenance fitness for elderly people to keep them out of nursing homes. And so I go to, like, you know, different houses for people that might be in risk of, you know, families that feel like, okay, you know, so-and-so is, you know, getting to the point now to where we have to do a lot of care for them or whatever like that. They might have an in-home nurse or something like that. And a lot of times what their problem is, they lose their independency. And so I believe that 90% of the problem with independency is lack of exercise and lack of mobility and them needing assistance because of them losing certain functions that they were able to do before. So my company is basically surrounded around those people to help them get mobility back in themselves and help them get the independency back and to be able to do things on their own to prolong them staying out of nursing homes or whatever like that. So that's my goal. Now, I fell in love with a couple of years ago working with a friend of mine with another company just like transporting the people like out of from the doctors to different rehab centers and all, and
right.
And that's one thing I realized, that, you know, these people, they get out of rehab, and basically rehab is just, you know, helping the area that they got hurt in, but what happens to the rest of their body that they stop using? So that's what I do. I pick up where rehab left off, and then I focus on the rest of the body as well.
Oh, it's awesome stuff, man, awesome. Hey, I wanted to ask you, too, it's been a while since we spoke, but I was trying to remember, what was your connection with Les? Did Les train you at some point, or did you guys end up... Well, go ahead.
Les Thatcher, I hope he was there. I thought he was going to be here tonight. I think something happened with the traffic or something like that.
He's been stuck at the gym every week for the last few weeks, so he hasn't been with us.
It's okay, man. Les is a busy guy, man, and like yep. What he's doing, man, he's awesome. But the way
you
got to
make that money right now, too.
Yeah.
But I met Les at like a training seminar, I believe. He did a training, I think it was like him, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, and Harley Race. They were doing like training seminars Terry Taylor, you know, seminars like that. And I started coming to them. I've been to a couple of them. And then like out of the seminar, they would pick certain guys to work wrestling matches or whatever. And out of those seminars, I guess me and Les really hit it off. You know, it would be like week-long seminars and stuff like that, and or weekend seminars. And I would just, like, book myself for them because I was always trying to get better. You know, I'm still trying to get better. But at that time, you know, I had time to be able and the money to be able to go do all these things. And I was doing them. And
stop that, Gary.
Put it up. Put it off. Close it. Put it up. Sorry, my daughter thinks I'm on the phone, and she's invisible when I'm on the phone. But anyway. But yeah, so he and I, we just hit it off, man. We kept in contact. He saw me at some of the Ring of Honor stuff that I did, because I think Ring of Honor was in Ohio a couple of times, and he was working with Ring of Honor at the Ohio shows and all that, like in the back and all. So we just kind of hit it off, man, and then we have a lot of spirituality in common as well. And we just kept in contact, man. He's always, like, giving me advice with wrestling. He watches my matches and stuff, like stuff that's posted, and, you know, anything I send to him, he's just like a mentor, man. Never asks for a dime, you know, to do so, other than what you pay at a training session. But but that's Les Thatcher, man. He's just that type of guy, man. So
he's an awesome guy, and he's been really high on you. And he as a matter of fact, he apologized dearly for not being here tonight, because he said, you know, he's kind of missed the last couple of weeks, and he was really looking forward to getting here this week to start the year out right. And then, you know, when we told him you were going to be on, he was really disappointed he couldn't be here with us. But he did say to wish you well and a happy new year.
I appreciate that. He's good people. Good people.
Yep.
Hey, Capriz, I want to thank you very much for joining us. And I know, you know, January 7th, the Ring of Honor tapings, Stu Burns Arena in Baltimore. What else you got coming up right now? And then do you have anything to plug for people to check out?
Yeah, of course, the Baltimore thing, that's going to be a big night for Cedric and I. We're going against Davey Richards and Kyle O'Reilly. You can check your local listings for that. One big thing I have going on is the service that I pastor, we're actually getting ready to go live on Ustream. It's going to start Sunday, every Sunday morning, 9:15 Eastern time. And you just go to you can go to my Facebook page, Caprice Coleman on Facebook, or Caprice Coleman on Twitter, and just you can check the link. But I think it's going to be on Ustream on the FMBC 830. And there, and you can click on there, and you can watch the service or whatever like that. So a lot of people, they, you know, they pick about, you know, I'm a wrestler and a preacher or whatever. I believe this is the year where I'm bring the two together, that people see this is not a work, you know, that I'm doing. It's just, it's who I am. And so a lot of my fan base, so people be able to see, you know, see me do both. They see me be able to lay the SmackDown on Saturday and Friday nights or whenever night's there, and then see me be able to talk about the Lord on Sunday mornings, and they actually see how I do both. So that's one of the things that I'm doing. So I pray that, you know, people that's following me, if you listen to the program now, it's Caprice Coleman on Twitter, and you can check more in about it. And I think that's going to be very exciting. I've also, I do a little bit with music. The group that's going to be singing with me on Sunday mornings, Crazy Praise, we it's a group, we write our own music and stuff like that, and we do other stuff. And we actually got a live recording we're doing pretty soon. And I've got some songs that I wrote that I'm going to be putting out as well. So I got my hands in a little bit, because they're busy. So that's it for Caprice Coleman, I guess.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. This is what I would think would be advice. I know TD Jakes sometimes will bring out Deion Sanders, and 700 Club for years always would bring on wrestlers. Whatever you do on the Ustream show on Sunday morning, if you decide to have some crossover appeal, please, please do not bring out the Briscoes. I don't think that will go over well.
You know what? I'm going to leave that alone, but I'm going to leave that alone. How about that? I don't want to break kayfabe, but they you know what? I'm going to say this about the Briscoes. They're probably the most entertaining tag team in Ring of Honor right now, and they've actually helped. They're very big cornerstones for Ring of Honor. I have a tremendous amount of respect for what they've done for the company and all. And those boys are wild. Those boys are wild. So I'll leave it like that.
Hey, thank you very much for joining us, man. And
no
we'll
problem.
Be right back after the break, everybody. Rich and I talking more about UFC and everything. We'll be right back.
All right, take it easy. Thank you.
Hello, this is Robin Zanner.
Hello, this is Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick for Rad.
Some people think it's fun to drive drunk, but that's unacceptable.
Be smart. If you drink,
don't drive.
Think ahead and choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
To be a good father is the most important job in a man's life, but it doesn't have to be hard. Play catch, go to a park or visit a zoo, help your child with their homework, sit down together for dinner, ask them how their day was. Things get busy, and sometimes we all fall short, but the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today.
Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
In 1977, in Johannesburg, South Africa, an 8-year-old boy picked up the game of golf from his father. By the age of 9, he was already outplaying him. The odds of that same boy then making it to the U.S. and European pro golf tours? 1 in 7 million. The odds of the Big Easy winning the Open Championship once and the U.S. Open Championship twice? 1 in 780 million. The odds of this professional golfer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Ernie Els encourages you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
You know what, Rich? You know, getting back to this, I'm really going to have to work on my weight. I'm in and out of breaks. I'm terrible with this. I've got to get this mojo back again. Got to thank the priest for being on too. And we didn't even scratch the surface with him because there's a ton of stuff that I still want to get into with him. So hopefully we have him on again soon.
Well, you know, there's a lot of interesting things about him, both personally as well as professionally. I mean, just the awesome stuff he's doing with senior citizens and the pastor's work that he does. The guy's just awesome, and what a nice guy, and always pleasant to deal with.
Which is, you know, I'm not saying it's a rarity because we've been lucky on this show with a lot of guys, but you can run into a lot who. Not quite as humble, not quite as focused, not lived as much life as Caprice has, and they can be a little bit of a pain to deal with. But getting bad. I'm sorry for people that wanted all wrestling tonight. I'm sorry. I've got to go back to the UFC here. I guess in a way, I mean, 2011 was a real great year for them business wise. And a really intriguing year for them business-wise. With everything that went down with the Fox deal and everything else. You know, George St. Pierre gets hurt at the end of 2011. Brock Lesnar gets hurt at the end of 2011. I guess, in a way, they had the worst calendar year they ever had. Pay-per-views were down. They are in growing pains as far as, promoting lots of shows, which I'm actually a proponent of. I'm in the minority. But I'm a fan of having more shows. I'm not for the idea of Dana White. You know, he wants to have a show everywhere in the world, you know, every single night. Yeah, I don't know about that, but you could do 180 across the world easily when you include Ultimate Fighter shows in different countries and things like that. And realistically, as long as you put on 12 things a year that are going to, you know, garner yourself large pay-per-view buy rates, You know, network deals and endorsement deals and other types of business decisions will help offset the cost of the other stuff. But the most important thing are those pay-per-view buys coming in. And now with Lesnar retiring, with GSP being out for at least half the year, if not a little bit more, they are in the position that the biggest thing to look for, I think, in 2012 is their ability to create new stars. They put on a great commercial for Frankie Edgar and Gray Maynard for their third fight this year, but they began the year last year facing off against each other and I think only doing about 250,000 buys, which, you think about it from one point of view, when you think about it from the boxing point of view and what else is doing that type of number, nothing is. But still, they didn't get Frankie Edgar over as a star. He's got a rabid, strong fan base, which is good, you know, much like Don Cerrone, but they're not pay-per-view draws yet. Don Cerrone lost this weekend to Nate Diaz, but Cerrone, still, he's got that rabid fan base. Can you tap into him becoming a bigger star? Can Ben Henderson and Clay, you know, do you use Clay Guida? I mean, they need marketable stars. They also need marketable bigger guys to take steps up. I mean, obviously, John Jones, they're going to be investing heavy in it as time goes along. Phil Davis, win or lose, is a guy that they're going to be investing in, unless he gets massacred by Rashad Evans coming up here in about a month. It's going to be interesting with their ability to create new stars. And Rich, I'll ask you, now, you know, being a mainstream UFC fan, you know, and not slaving over it every single possible second of your day and you know, watching old tapes from Japan and everything, you know, what are you looking for as far as a star? What makes you, what separates you from your money when it comes to the UFC? Because, again, they have a lot of guys, but no one's got that huge, massive package that GSP and Lesnar obviously did where people want to pay to see him. And then Rashad Evans, people want to pay to see him get beat up. You know, he's up there. They do have a couple of moderate pay-per-view draws, BJ Penn, but I have a feeling that's going to continue to slip as the years go by. You know, what are you looking for this year as far as, you know, that superstar guy for the UFC? Is it a guy like Anderson Silva now who's, you know, always good for maybe 500,000 pay-per-view buys, depending on who he's fighting, like pushing him over the top, or is it somebody else out there?
Typically me, just the way I approach any MMA show when I'm watching is I just want to see a good fight. It doesn't have to be a named guy, but in terms of what's going to hold my interest and keep me tuning in and get behind somebody, to be honest, personality. That's just my biggest thing is some of these guys are pretty bland and it really can be kind of hard to get behind them. And I don't know if maybe that's the pro wrestling fan in me that just, you know, I'm just naturally drawn to somebody with charisma that, you know, I can get behind and give me a reason to actually support that person and follow their career path.
You know, it one guy who does have that, obviously Chael Sonnen. There is talk of in the UFC on Fox in Chicago. There is talk of CM Punk coming out to the ring with him for his fight against Mark Munoz, which I'll say this, and again, that could play later on into Lesnar and Dana and maybe some detente, or you could see some trading back and forth with some action, which, you know what, it's not a bad idea. That's a great idea. You know, if done properly with certain guys, obviously you don't put John Jones in a WWE ring, but, you know, guys who, you know, your Ortiz, I mean, you can at least have them appear and you can do some things where, I mean, look at Dan Severn's interaction in Ring of Honor. I mean, there's a reason UFC's popular. People like real sports. People, that's why it's, you know, the 29 of the top 31 shows on cable in 2011 were sports. You know, the number one rated show all of last year on cable was Auburn winning the national championship over Oregon.
You going to remind us of that, are you?
Yes, I am. People like sports. People like, you know, and sports write themselves. Look at Ronda Rousey. Like just an organic thing with her in MMA and her taking people's arms home with her, she's got a gimmick. Now, she adds to that gimmick by having Judo Jean LaBelle wear a pink shirt and have a stopwatch, but it came organically. And you know, that's why people like sports. And WWE tries to go out of their way to not want to be sports. They want to be sports sometimes, like when they want to be added to a cable tier, like they're going to want to for that network coming up. But then sometimes with their actions and how things are portrayed in the ring, they want to be the furthest thing from sports, or they want to, you know, and it's stupid. It's stupid, and the UFC proves that. And again, you know, having some reality, Dan Severn's success being, you know, part of the main event ROH feud, there's a place for it, and I think it'd be something that could work. And again, that is it fantasy booking? Of course it is. But it wouldn't hurt my feelings because it gives those guys who, again, are good performers. Ken Shamrock was a great performer. Don Fry was a great performer. Kevin Randleman could have been a great performer with his very limited work that he did in Pride. I mean, Peter Arts, you know, he's trying to do stuff with Peter Arts and Jerome LeBanner. And, you know, it is what it is. But, again, you know, if you do it well-placed, it's a good idea, and it provides some flexibility and options and just some other things you could do both ways. And, again, UFC is a sport. People know that now. I don't think there's people out there who still just the dumbest of the bunch that will consider it pro wrestling. I know pro wrestling fans are really, you know, they hate the hardcore wrestling fans that don't like sports, really hate the pushback of having any MMA, you know, involved in it at all. But from my own personal point of view and from a business point of view, it's something that I think could have a little bit of legs with some interaction here or there. And Punk coming out with Sonnen is great. It is fantastic. But one thing that the Lesnar retirement, the GSP injury said to me was, I didn't like it when they announced it. I didn't like how they announced it. They are taking such an incredible risk, with having Sonnen and Mark Munoz face off against each other. It should have been Bisping if you were going to do a fight with Sonnen before doing he and Anderson Silva. Phil Davis and Rashad Evans, now that Machida won, or I'm sorry, now that John Jones won, you need Rashad Evans to win. You know, if there was one thing, if John Jones would have lost that fight with Machida, you could say if Evans won this fight, you got a rematch against Machida, where he got cocky and got knocked out and lost his title, and then you could still have money with John Jones. But if now Phil Davis wins, does anyone really want to pay to see Phil Davis and John Jones? And John Jones needs to be a pay-per-view draw. And again, they are, you never know what can happen in a fight. You know, you see it time after time after time with guys getting beat and upset and knocked out. And hey, I'm the only person on the website that predicted Johnny Hendricks to defeat John Fitch. Nobody saw that coming, and there was a great example of that. Anything can happen in a fight, and to throw your one pay-per-view, and again, it's still going to do pay-per-view money, but if Sonnen goes into that fight with Anderson Silva with a loss, and here's the other thing, too. This is being portrayed as a number one contendership. So if Munoz wins, in theory, he gets the shot against Silva before we see Silva Sonnen, which, you know, Silva, if he's matched up against, like Sonnen was last time, he's good for pay-per-view numbers. When he's not matched up against a guy that people think he's got a shot at, you know, that he's not just going to destroy, he does not do well. And I think the only thing you can do to save, you know, if Munoz wins, to me, the only thing you can do is put Silva and Munoz on Fox for the third show. I think that's the only way you can do that, and you can build Munoz up on the network as an All-American wrestler and an All-American guy who shut up Sonnen and now is going to shut up the Brazilian. You know, and it takes luster off of then later on in the year doing Sonnen and Silva. And again, what if Silva gets hurt? What if Sonnen gets hurt? There was the one guaranteed pay-per-view masterpiece you had this year that, again, because of things that are out of their control, just created a real risky proposition for Chicago, you know, when it comes to that second Fox show.
Well, let me ask you about the show this weekend, because I do want to mention to everybody that maybe is not aware, if you are an MMA fan or just a casual MMA fan, the Strikeforce show this weekend on Showtime, if you don't have Showtime, you should be getting it free for this weekend, so that should make it a little bit easier for you to actually be able to see this card, and I guess the prelims are going to be on one of the Showtime channels, Extreme, I guess.
Showtime Extreme, which, by the way, you know, as far as people who follow boxing, because Showtime's been very good with boxing over the last couple of years, you know, there was talk at one point of turning Showtime Extreme, or at least the possibility of just turning it into Showtime Sports,
and beating HBO at the jump for that, because in HBO's digital tier, that's one thing they don't have, and that's one thing that they could do quite easily is a sports network. So this again may open that door again for Showtime to actually pull off something like that.
Hey, I'm all for that. I'd love to see HBO and Showtime go at it. You know, maybe if Showtime does it, it does push HBO, because I still think HBO is just awesome at everything they do with sports. And to be able to have a whole network of that, I'd love it. I'd absolutely love it.
And they really, really should. And, again, the UFC and coming together, I'm sorry, not the UFC, really this is Zuffa, coming together with Showtime to continue on their Strikeforce deal. Again, I have praised this over and over and the possibilities of it. And, you know, this isn't the most epic lineup or anything like that. But, again, especially if you're going to be able to get a Showtime free preview. If you like Canvas Maps, you know, Showtime is a good thing to have. It's usually cheaper than HBO, you know, as far as what it costs a month. They do have a good digital, you know, package. I'm not a big movie watcher, but I'm a big sports fan. They do have a lot of boxing on. They do a great job with that. And then again, these Strikeforce shows are going to be more concentrated, more focused now, where you don't have to. The Showtime Challenger shows, I would watch them, you know, when I could. I didn't go out of my way for them. And realistically, they were hard to really endorse for someone who was like, should I watch this show? Now, you know, if you got something else going on, because they're not going to be all that great. I mean, I don't think, you know, I guess I'll be happy that I've seen the ascension of Aubin St. Poiré and some people like that. But realistically, I mean, they were hard shows to really endorse. And again, it spreads Strikeforce too thin, you know, as far as being able to put on the most quality product that they could. And, you know, with these shows now, again, like I said, they're going to be more concentrated. You're going to have, you know, as much talent as could possibly, you know, appear on these shows. And Luke Rockhold and Keith Jardine, I know, you know, Jardine's looked at as a, you know, people say a UFC retread, and obviously, you know, he's got the most name appeal. That's why he's getting a fight against Rockhold. But, you know, it's, again, it should be a showcase for Rockhold, which, and that's really why you'd be turning in Robbie Lawler, who always usually makes for a fun fight, is going to be fighting on there. King Mo, Tyrone Woodley. I mean, they're, you know, Tariq Saffedine. There are some good. These should be good showcase bouts for these guys. You know, all five of them. So as far as matchups go, not the greatest, you know, show to endorse. But as these cards go along, they're going to be easier and easier to endorse, because at least there's a reason for everything on this show as far as being, you know, somewhat of a showcase, in lack of having, you know, your Kaufman, you know, Misha Tate or some other high level type of fight, you know, your Jacare Souza, you know, Muhammad Lawal, you know, that's what, you know, Strikeforce's pinnacle, you know, has kind of been, you know, not counting the Shamrock Lees and Diaz's and things like that. So again, I'm just kind of rambling on here about it, but again, kind of damning with faint praise, but, you know, again, realistically, these Strikeforce shows, as they go along, are going to be easier to endure. So, I don't know.
I don't know if you saw my note there, to you.
No, I had to catch my breath there. I just noticed it now because, I thought when I saw Piper's name in your little instant message, it's what I sounded ranting like. But I see he's going to be in Legend's House, which, you know, may or may not be as lucid as what I was just spitting out about Strikeforce.
The possibilities. just having him. I mean, just putting him in any home would totally up the dynamics and just present all kind of possibilities.
I would just like to see
put him
to Gary Busey.
Yeah, put him in a home with a bunch of pro wrestlers. Awesome. This right now has just become the most interesting show on WWE Network.
Well, I tell you, I don't know how the hell they're getting to April and getting this thing kicked off by April. I just, you know, it's going to be so second rate. If they're dead set on starting in April, they should just play the Legends Roundtables and the, you know, the 2-hour
you know, clipped up, cleaned up shows from the Spectrum and Boston Garden and the Cap Center and that stuff over and over and over till they get these types of original programs where they should be. Because again, I'm not a reality show fan, other than like, you know, Dancing with the Stars is one of the few I can actually tolerate watching, because I like beautiful women in short skirts who can dance, because I can't
nothing
dance.
Wrong with
so,
that.
You know, yeah, exactly. You know, hot celebrities and things like that, I'm fine with that. But as a whole, I don't usually watch these shows, but you know, they can have perverse great entertainment value. But they have to be framed out right, and I don't know if they're going to have enough time in post-production, if they're going to rush through these things and get them set up by April. I mean, we're already into the first week of January, and okay, Piper's announced, but what else do they have? And, you know, are they going to get the most out of it that they really could as far as the entertainment goes by rushing it? But I guess we'll have to see. But, yeah, I don't know. Duggan, maybe Iron Sheik, Piper, anybody that was that's still around that was a cartoon on the Hulk Hogan Rock and Wrestling Show. Great. I wonder how many Mae Young appearances are we going to get on that show? The show every week should just be like Paul the Butcher of Vashon's Wedding. They should just end in pie fighting and women getting their shirts ripped off and David Schultz just being David Schultz. That's, yes. There you go.
Well, what the hell? Let's get John Stossel on there, too.
Where's he at right now? Fox Business or something like that?
Yeah, he's got some kind of show on Fox or something, yeah. I've seen it a couple times. It's interesting.
Roll him back. I have to be smacked again. That's fine. The ghost of Fuji, they're smiling. That to me is always the most underrated part of that 2020 piece, is just Fuji with the crap-eating grin on his face. Just like, you know, it's just fantastic.
the best, yeah, but still the best David Schultz story I ever heard. It's out of Ole Anderson's book. I don't know if you remember this part, but apparently he was coming down south, going to Florida. He wanted to stop off in Georgia for a few days and do some shots here, make a little vacation money. So Ole sets him up, books him for a few nights and this, that, and the other. And come show nights, he's a complete no show. The next time around, Ole hears from him again. He wants to stop off in Georgia on the way to Florida, blah, 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 pick up a little vacation money. Ole says, sure, come on down. Schultz gets here. He's not on any of the booking sheets at all.
And you know what? Ole's a better guy. You know what? I couldn't do that to David Schultz. David Schultz was always one of those guys that legitimately, and there were, you know, and again, I knew that all these guys, at least for the most part, I mean, I never thought that Randy Mulkey was a tough guy, but, you know, for the most part, you know, they were presented as big, tough guys, and you know, as a kid, you bought it, but there were, you know, but again, you know, it was show and stuff like that, and you know, explained very early what it was, but still, there were a handful of guys that no matter what type of show it was, terrified me. Absolutely terrified. Stan Hansen was one of them. Bruiser Brody was one of them. The Road Warriors. I could not get through my little brain why anybody, real or not real, predetermined or not predetermined, whatever it was, would want to get beat up like that. I just didn't understand why, you know, like Tony Zane and Gene Ligon would want to just get beat up like that. I just could not comprehend, you know, getting beaten up by these dudes. David Schultz was one of those dudes. He just,
yeah.
I mean, because I was like, you know, those, I saw the Hogan matches with him, like on the Coliseum videotapes right when they had come out, and the 2020 thing had already happened, and I, you know, saw him a little bit, you know, on AWA, and just, he made me believe that he was completely insane, and he was complete, you know, scary redneck, which, you know, growing up right outside Washington, D.C., you know, I just, something about, you know, meeting a guy like that, I just, no thanks.
Yeah, hey, here's something out of the whatever happened to or a blast from the past type thing here. Dark Journey is going to be at Wrestle Reunion in Toronto.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not making a joke here. Has anyone seen or heard from Dark Journey? I heard of Dark Journey, and I watched her in Mid-South UWF, and she was, Missing Link, and the stuff with her and Missy Hyatt and everything, and then she came over, joined Tully Blanchard. She was the newest addition to the Horsemen for about a second, and I never heard from her again.
Yeah, there's always been a lot of conversation where, when you're going through the where are they nows, and she always comes up, and nobody seems to have the answer, but apparently somebody found her, and she'll be in Toronto.
I'll be damned. Well, good for her.
Yeah.
and hopefully,
we'd love some
photos. What kind of photos?
Just any to see what the hell happened to her for the last, 25 years.
Okay. Well, I wasn't sure if you were going back in time there for some of those, PWI pinup poster type photos or anything like that.
Oh, those are always around.
That's. Oh, man. Well, an hour and a half into the show, I think I pretty much killed it, Dad. What do you think?
Ah, oh, man. We're always alive and kicking here. Having fun. Having fun. It's all about having fun.
Hopefully Les will be back with us next week. I'm not sure if we have any guests planned or not, but we'll let you know on ringsiderap.com and with what's coming up. And, again, I've got to get better at this, and I could go through and reel off the shows that are upcoming here on the network, but then people will just be upset with me because I know I'm going to screw them up, and I don't care. The fact that I'm in Delaware or not, I am not going to upset Jerry Oates to have him kick my ass. So I'm going to let Rich actually plug the shows for the website.
All right, let's see. Pulling it up now. Tomorrow night, Peach State Pandemonium, Mike Norris, Jerry Oates, and Bobby Simmons will revisit the subject of wrestling publications and their impact on the business. It was a great show a few weeks ago when they did that. They're going to redo it or do a sequel to it.
I was such a geek for all those magazines, too.
Oh, absolutely. This time they'll actually be joined by Tom Burke. Awesome, awesome. Dave Drayson and also Les Thatcher. Hey, that name sounds familiar.
I remember that guy.
I wonder if that's why he can't do this show tonight, because he's doing that show. We're going to have to
I had a Skyline Chili question for Les, too, tonight, too.
Our missing partner will be there tomorrow night. So we'll have Dark Journey in here next week. Oh, Lord.
Oh, man.
We love you. We do love you. We miss you.
We do.
Send a postcard.
We do.
Send a postcard. Write every now and then. Let us know how you are.
These are your words. I don't want to get him mad at me.
I can take him. I got to tell you, there's a band that I've always said I think Hall & Oates is one of the most underrated bands ever. There's a band that's kind of reminiscent of them, and I'd heard a song a while back, and I heard it again over the week, and I love these guys. Fits and the Tantrums. I don't know if you've heard of these guys, but they are awesome. Yeah. Fitz, the guy's name is like Fitzsimmons or something like that, F-I-T-Z Simmons. That's his last name. And at some point, I guess he shortened it to Fitz, and it's supposed to sound like having the fits and having the tantrums, so it's Fitz and the Tantrums or something. I don't know. Something like that, but awesome, awesome band. And kind of in the same vein of Hall & Oates. Good stuff. Check them out. That's my musical note of the week.
And a fine plug it was, which will allow me to plug away with the fact that I believe after having 2 weeks off for Christmas and New Year's, Brian Alvarez and I will be back with Wrestling Observer Live this coming Sunday on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Channel 92. If there's no football on, I believe that's what the channel is. Or Sirius Channel 94, XM Channel 208. SportsMyLine.com, WrestlingObserver.com, Sunday from 6 to 8. You can listen to it in any number of ways there. Also, Adam Summers and I will be back talking about the big Tokyo Dome show from New Japan Pro Wrestling that took place today. The January 4th, they do it every year, no matter what the crowd is like. Apparently, it looks like it's going to be a little more positive than they thought it was. Hiroshi Tanahashi breaks the record of set by Yuji Nagata for title defenses of that IWGP New Japan Heavyweight Championship with 11, and we're going to be talking about that, plus the outdoor hockey game and a number of other things coming up on the next Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. And I'm sure I'll be doing something else randomly as well, too, but if nothing else, back here with Rich and Les next Wednesday night from 8 to 10, or at least 8 to 9:30 or so.
Yeah, I want to put a mention out, too, this week. Obviously, a big week for GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, the Georgia Wrestling Awards, the third year we've been doing that over there. And just want to mention our buddy Jimmy Ray, formerly of the network, and actually we've been talking to him about possibly coming back with the show, doing maybe a once-a-month kind of thing here starting again this year. Jimmy Ray won Booker of the Year. Or best booker, I should say, and Johnny Gaten won best promoter, and his promotion, Rampage Pro Wrestling, got best promotion, and actually that's where Rave's booking as well. Some of the other highlights: the Washington Bullets won tag team. I want to put a mention out there to Terry Lawler. A lot of people may not be familiar with that name, but. On the national or international scene, but he's actually, I believe, the legit brother, if I'm not mistaken, of Steve the Brawler Lawler. If not, I know that they have worked together in the past, but he's been in the business for like a couple of decades or so, and he actually won the first of the Ted Allen Legends Award, which of course started last year. Actually, a lot of the wrestlers wanted to honor Ted after he had passed away, and by basically creating an award that was kind of in the same vein of what he did for the business and what he did for the people in it, just providing mentorship and whatnot. And the first winner of that past Ted Allen was Terry Lawler, so congrats to him. I know a lot of the guys really do look up to him. Kyle Matthews, got a three-peat on the Best Technician Award, and Crew Jones came through on the Best Performer and Best Overall Wrestler, Kyle Matthews. First year he's gotten that. So he won a couple of awards this year, so congrats to him and all the others that we didn't have time to mention, but congrats to everybody. And it's a peer award. It's not... not open to the fans. It's the GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com staff, the radio people, anybody that's affiliated with the current scene or that covers it. And basically, you know, what better way to be honored than by those people that you work with closest and spend most of your time with. So congrats to all, and we look forward to a big, 2012, I guess we're in now, right? And I got to tell you, Kyle Matthews, that is a name that a lot of people listening to the show need to start paying attention to. He's a part of the Evolve show next weekend, and he's done some stuff. I guess he's been part of some Dragon Gate USA and TNA events, as well as I know he's wrestled, I believe, Adam Pearce this year down here at Rampage for the NWA title, and also faced Davey Richards down in at Rampage for the Ring of Honor title. So this is good with... This is a kid with Stardom waiting.
Well, I was really happy to hear, too, that he was going to relinquish his award for the time being until a great justice was overturned and I get my radio show host of the year award.
Yeah, okay.
It's the best I got.
All right. So, yeah, and on that note, Gracie. stay tuned to us, of course, on Ringside Wrap, and don't forget. Let's see, what was I going to put up tomorrow? I was supposed to make a note. The promo.
Well, yes, one of the greatest promos you've ever seen, all time, all your life.
Yeah, this should be used in classes. It's that good.
It honestly, it's great on a lot of levels, depending on which level you're at while watching it. But, yes, put that up there. And, again, for until you get back to us next week, all week long, go to ringsiderap.com for all the latest news, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, the radio network. And we will talk to each and every one of you again next week.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued